The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. This show is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/ElderScrollsLoreCast. Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, a place where the Elder Scrolls community can come together to discuss the boundaries of our knowledge about the universe of the Elder Scrolls. Welcome back, adventurers. This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, and we have some very exciting news for you today. Well, two very exciting things. First of all, we have a very special guest. Arimithius is here to join us today, and let me go through the regular stuff. I'm your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here, as usual, with Lotus of Doom. Lotus, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not used to recording this early, as I've been home from work for 11 minutes.
11 minutes? You just, like, walked in the house, and you just turned on the computer, and you're, like, ready to go. Yep.
That is dedication.
That is absolute dedication. And I am here ready to go as well, because I'm super excited for a few things. One, we're talking with Arimithius today from Written in Uncertainty. He's one of our good buddies. He's on the Robots Radio Network. He is our other Elder Scrolls lore show on the network that dives into the really, really deep stuff in the lore. And Arimithius, how are you? How's it going?
Doing well. It's been a roasting hot day, which I gather is exactly the case across the pond as well. And I'm feeling happy. Outside of the Elder Scrolls, I've actually leveled up as an adult because I'm doing gardening properly for a change.
Ooh. But, ooh.
Yeah.
The rough weather for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing the hard mode of real life, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck with all the gardening. Yeah. But we're happy to have you here today to talk about, you are bringing a weird and wacky topic. But before we get into that, a big announcement went out today. QuakeCon for this year, 2021, has officially, there's been some speculation. There's been some news going on, you know, like the rumor mill's been going, but we officially have the dates. We officially have all of the events that are going, and we can now officially talk about the fact that this show and the three of us were invited to do a segment coming up for QuakeCon, and our segment will be on the 20th on the QuakeCon community channel. There are multiple channels this year. So there's a main channel. There are events happening in different locations across the globe. There are channels for different countries. There's all sorts of stuff going on, and there is a community channel. So there's a whole bunch of really fun events from different community members, different people from the community, streamers, content creators, podcasters, a whole bunch of different people. And we are one of the groups that was selected. We're actually one of the first groups to go on. We go on August 20th, which I believe is Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern, which is actually very early if you're Pacific, because that's 3 hours earlier. So quick math, that's 10, 9, 8, 8 o'clock in the morning Pacific. And it's on the QuakeCon community Twitch channel. So twitch.tv/QuakeConCommunity. So go follow that right now if you want to make sure that you catch our segment. And what is our segment? We are doing a contest. I will be the host. And it is a combination quiz show of lore topics and game topics. Because if you guys listen to our shows, you know that my good old co-host Lotus here loves the lore, but he's got a lot more experience with the game stuff. And Eremithius has some game experience, but he's got a lot more experience with the lore stuff. So it is a battle between lore knowledge and game knowledge. And we are going to see who is going to win. And you can actually play along at home as well and keep a tally to see if you can outscore either of these guys. So I have on my channel at @robots_radio on Twitter, a poll that's going to be running all week. Currently, it is up right now. We are doing the live show at twitch.tv/robotsradio. It is currently up now. It'll be running all week to see who you think the winner will be. Will it be Eremithius or will it be Lotus of Doom? And in just, 8 days from now, we're going to find out. So this is super exciting. Wow, and thank you.
So much closer than I realized.
Yeah, it's the 12th right now as we record this.
Did I think it was like the 4th?
Yeah. When this goes up, it'll be like it'll be exactly a week from when this actually goes up for everybody. So actually, how's that 8 days? It doesn't make any sense. What's the math? How does math happen? How does math work?
The
20th. I guess it's Friday. Up on Friday. The 20th is Friday. So maybe it's Friday at 11 a.m. So I'm looking at a calendar right now. Let me get the dates right. So it looks like we go up on Friday. So yeah, Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. We're going up. So yeah, cool stuff. Very exciting. Are you guys ready for this? You guys feel like you've been studying up on the lore? I've got my questions already. Are you gonna be ready to go?
I make no promises.
time to cram in playing all of the Elder Scrolls games between now and then.
It'd be funnier if it was just the total inverse and I only got lore, didn't know anything about game, and turns out Eremithius is secretly a god slayer on like 3 different servers of ESO.
Yeah, well, we're gonna have some really interesting questions. I'm gonna set it up in some different ways, and I think you guys will have fun with the way that I set it up. So that's coming up. So I hope it'll be exciting for you guys at home as well. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's gonna be a blast. But thank you to the QuakeCon team, and we really appreciate being involved with that. So looking forward to it. So Eremithius, let's hand it off to you. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about the towers today, which is mildly controversial because a bunch of the stuff comes from, well, I say a bunch of the stuff, a bunch of the stuff did come from unlicensed sources, and then it's just got more and more certain as time has gone on. The towers are structures that have some degree of control over what happens on Mundus, and they're structures that are either built by the gods or by various different types of elves, and exactly what that means and how they work, I'm sure we'll get into. But just a short list of the towers to go through now. So you know, we're not just talking about wizard towers when any old Telvanni will just go and build their mushrooms, and then that's a tower. These towers are built in some sort of imitation of the first towers and what they were. The first tower is Adamantia, which is the Adamantine Tower, which is in some things you read, it's Akatosh's spaceship, but it's the place where the gods decided the fate of Lorcan. The first known structure on Mundus, the Direni Tower, which is now the home of the character gen sequence in ESO. That's where the gods decided the fate of Lorcan, and it's the first structure on Mundus, the first real permanent thing that existed, because that's when convention happened and all of the laws of physics vaguely started happening. Then you have the Red Tower, Red Heart, which is Red Mountain, which sprang up when Lorcan's heart was ripped out and flung across Tamriel. Then you have Snowthroat, which is the throat of the world in Skyrim, the highest mountain. You have Greensap, which is Falanesti in Valenwood, one of the Grot Oaks, or maybe all Grot Oak, so that's not 100% sure, but we'll get into that. Crystal Like Law, or the Crystal Tower in Somerset. Walk Brass, which is the Numidium. And that's it for... Oh, sorry. And White Gold in Cyrodiil, which was built by the Aeliads. You've potentially also got the Orichalc Tower, which was maybe built in Yokuda. We know very little about that one, but that's possibly there. And we also have some things that might have been towers or might be towers in some form in the Doom Crag, and that was built in Glenumber, if I'm remembering the zones correctly.
Isn't that Rivenspire?
Rivenspire, possibly. Yes, because Ravenwatch is involved. And the Coral Tower of Thrass. They may be towers, they may not be. But those are the towers as they stand.
Okay. Yep. So where do we start with this? Because clearly the beginning of this, the importance of towers is very clear in the lore, in the beginning, and the beginning of everything starting with a tower, and the importance of the tower coming kind of full circle with the, the killing of Lorcan and the tossing of his heart into the sea from the tower, and all of that happening with the tower being that source. Right. Mm-hmm. So that being a kind of a key point in convention and a key point in the killing of Lorcan, that's not just symbolic, it's physical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the elves, who we know like to believe that they are direct descendants of the gods and are replicating the things of the gods. And so it would make sense that they themselves are now replicating towers like the gods created on Mundus that have similar functions to the tower that the gods created. So that also seems to make sense, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And they are sort of built in explicit imitation, if you believe some of the sources. I'm trying to find the quote from the Ur text of Towers, which is the Numantia Intercept, which was released on the forums shortly before Oblivion's release, believe it or not, says that this, if I can actually find the thing, it's... Okay, they're all built in imitation of adamantia. That the elves have kind of built their own world and their own reality in some ways. And where is that quote? Hang on. Yep, as they were the most powerful, the quote that I've managed to dig up about why they did it, the Ulmer were building, as they were the most powerful of lesser spirits in the ages after the convention and eager to emulate what they saw, the Ulmer began construction of their own towers. That they built more than one shows that they were not of one mind, because this is not only just a reflection of we want to be like the gods, it's just we want to be us, we want to be something separate and distinct, and it's an expression of the creators of those towers as much as it is a reiteration of what the other towers are, or what adamantia is anyway,
right? The original tower, right?
Yeah.
And you see different reflections of this, right? Like you see the Crystal Tower is almost as close as a pure reflection in a way of the original in some ways. It's a tower-ish tower, and the White Gold Tower is a tower-ish tower, right?
Right.
But then you look at something like the Green Sap. It's a plant that's a tower, right? Which is, it's very Bosmer-ish version of a tower, right? Mm. Which seems very, makes sense of that. But then you get further and further afield, like Snowthroat is a mountain that is a tower that must have been magagically created somehow from the earth itself.
Yeah.
And then you have, Walk Brass, like the Numidium as a tower is a tower that's created as a machine. it's different from all the other towers in that it is a machine that can actually move around rather than be confined to a specific spot, you know? And
yeah,
each one of these towers kind of becomes its own thing. Red Mountain is kind of similar to Snowthroat in that it is a mountain, but it's an active mountain. It's a volcano, you know, like each of these towers are in their own ways very distinct and different from each other.
They are. I think what it is that when you say in terms of like tower itself, you have a pretty definitive meaning to a tower. You can have different styles of a tower, but like, the first association you'd make to a tower is to have it be a literal tower. When this seems like you can kind of almost stretch that into being like, well, tower is kind of like an overarching style of just referring to these things as, you know, they are towers, but they don't literally need to be towers in some situations. It's more of like the powerful structure that it is. And then if you get into the idea, I don't know, are we going to touch too much on the wheel thing? Cause I was going to say that's, yeah, that's when we're also going to get into more of like towers are theoretically spokes on the wheel of, you know,
or a tower as a construct that ascends towards the sky.
Correct.
They each have a power source.
Yeah. I was gonna bring the wheel in as a thing, because it's interesting that you say that they're not all literal towers, because that does kind of play into the symbolism,
right?
Because the towers in themselves are an imitation of the tower that is the Arabis, if you like. Because just to unpack that, Tom already brought up the wheel. One particular model of thinking about how the Arabis works is, or how the Arabis is structured, is that
can we just pause real quick and just back up to Arabis for anybody who doesn't know the term.
Yeah, sure. The Arabis is the universe of the Elder Scrolls. So the Arabis is everything. It is Tamriel. It is Nern. It is Mundus. Yeah. It is Oblivion. It is Aetherius,
the shape
everything.
Of that.
Yeah. All creation.
Right.
Yep. Yep. The Arabis is a wheel with spokes in this particular model and way of thinking, that you have Aetherius around the outside, you have Nern as the hub of the wheel, or you have Mundus as the hub of the wheel in the middle. You have the eight Aedra as the spokes of the wheel, which will then leave you 16 gaps in the wheel, which are the Daedric princes. Now that's that model being is all well and good, but then if you turn the wheel on its side, as in you look at a wheel, not exactly side on, but facing the wheel, it's an eye. It's just a straight line.
Yeah, as if the wheel was coming towards you, like rolling towards you, you're going to see a straight line or an eye as opposed to any of the other stuff that is now on the sides.
Yes, and that's sort of the part of the power that towers supposedly have. And it gets into a little bit of chim as well, which I'm not going to touch on. Let's not go into the whole bucket of crazy unless we get too many questions from chat. That eye is sort of the central power of the towers, that they replicate the shape of reality, and they are therefore they affirm reality in some ways. That you'll hear some people say that the towers are the things that hold the world up, that keep the world together, and that shape is part of it, because they're saying this is what the world looks like, this is what the world should look like, and those sorts of things. And I don't know. I'm not going to get into the aliens and the white gold examples of that right now, because we need to unpack more.
So this is just side tangent, really quick.
Yep.
The Arabis, if you take a wheel and you turn it on its side, it looks like an eye like this, right? Like an absolutely straight eye. None of the towers actually look like that. Like, if you get nitpicky.
True.
Right?
True.
Like, think about it. Like, the Adamantine Tower kind of looks like that. It's about the closest thing to that. The Crystal Tower kind of looks like this. You know, the White Gold Tower looks like this. Mountains look like this. the Numidium looks like a person.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the plant looks like a plant. Like, almost nothing looks like a capital I. Now, maybe that's a approximation of something as close as you can get to a capital I that isn't quite a capital I. And so it's an imperfect representation of a symbolic thing, which could be a thing. But at the same time, maybe that's a misunderstanding of something and maybe we're stretching. Maybe that's why this fits into the weird and wacky category. You know?
Well, right. Because I mean, like, so much of this is, it's almost like there's little bits that it, I guess this whole series does this as a whole with Elder Scrolls, where they kind of like give you a little hint that it's like they're, you know, the writers and stuff like that. It's like they're nudging at things, whether they're directly in game or in this case, it's like, well, this is some speculation, but then the game does lean into this sometimes, especially with,
It's there.
It's not totally out of universe. And then one of my favorite theories, just in regards, because in the weird and wacky category, I actually really like this. I don't know if that's what they intend, but I just think it's neat because it's a extra level of things aren't just here because they're here. There is this weird, deeper thing that's floating around, even if it's not at the forefront of like a lot of the lore or anything like that. But it's just kind of like this thing in the background, like spokes, as we were talking about, just holding up all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, this all is happening. But little did you know, it's these things actually holding it together. And as the games have progressed, many of these towers have met untimely ends.
Right.
And that's something that I've always been fascinated by, is the series acknowledging these towers and or kind of dismantling these towers for a purpose, or is it just these are something that people have latched onto, let's blow them up or do something fun with them in each of the games? It seems almost like in the weird and wacky category, it's a little too coincidental that there isn't like a deeper reason that they keep kind of addressing these things, or are we seeing something that isn't there,
or is it just an easy narrative thing to write in? Or is it something that we've learned in video games is an iconic, easy thing to put on the horizon that you can keep your eye on and use as an orientation spot in a three-dimensional world? Or maybe it just works for all of those things, and so therefore it works for all of those things, and it's convenient to answer all of those things, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about the destruction aspect, because you're right that it does seem to be doing that, and Skyrim particularly really kind of bought into this.
Really, the biggest one that kind of went whole. I mean, because you can have a volcano erupt more than once, that doesn't mean the volcano is destroyed. And you know, with the event at Red Mountain, it didn't necessarily actually destroy Red Mountain more than it destroyed Red Mountain in previous. I mean, it's pretty nuked of Vardenfell.
But what about, okay, so maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. If you destroy the mount, if you destroy the tower or the power source for the tower, doesn't both either thing dismantle the tower?
I see what you're saying.
Potentially, yes. Just to kind of unpack that, each tower supposedly has a stone, which is the thing that allows it to work its magic. Again, going back to the original text that talks about this, the Numantia Intercept, which, again, unlicensed, but make of that what you will. It was a bit more forthcoming about how towers work than any of the games have been. And it's saying that each tower has its stone, which is then used to filter, or it's kind of used to kind of filter and reshape creation. The reason that towers are so powerful is because it draws stuff in directly from Aetherius or Oblivion, molds it, runs it through the stone, and releases it into Mundus as a form of potent magic. That's how they work, at least according to the Numantia Intercept. But you destroy the stone and you deactivate the tower, to use the fan community language.
Right, yeah, and quote unquote destroyed.
Yeah. Each of those games have done something to adjust it. I mean, you can potentially make a case for it even since Daggerfall, but certainly since Morrowind, that's kind of explicitly gone that way, because the Heart of Lorcan in Morrowind was was destroyed or freed, depending on quite what interpretation you want to believe on that. Then, and so the thing that was powering Red Mountain is potentially gone. Right. The Amulet of Kings was the Stone of White Gold, and that's destroyed in Elder Scrolls 4. And well, the line from the Book of the Dragonborn that talks about the tower in Skyrim is this thing: when the snow tower lies sundered, kingless, bleeding. That's not necessarily destroyed, but it doesn't sound healthy.
No, it sounds pretty bad.
No.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great.
Yeah. Get that tower into an ER.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
yeah, so that's, I don't know, that's just a fascinating bit, because it's one of those situations where when looking at something and you have something in mind as opposed to just like a blank slate, are you filling in the details to this to make it come to this conclusion, or are these things leading you to this conclusion on its own? And I've been very curious with that, with the, you know, kind of with like the concept of towers being destroyed. It's like, originally, prior to me ever learning about this, it never dawned on me, but then going back after hearing it, it's like, oh, this is interesting. I kind of like this. I wonder if there is this like deeper narrative that they're slowly digging toward. I mean, probably at the rate we get Elder Scrolls games in, you know, canon, I'd say long after all of us have passed away, lying bleeding, like previous situation.
It's going to be competing the rate at which we get Song of Ice and Fire
no
books.
There's no chance we're seeing the end of all of these hours, and it's like really pick up the pace, I would assume. But it's just interesting, you know, that this is kind of almost like a trajectory now. But it's like, is it intended, or are we filling in the blanks? Is always something that I've just liked about these theories.
Yeah, it's certainly something that, as I say, this Elder Scrolls 5 has kind of laid it out really plainly. But it all depends on what happens with the Elder Scrolls 6.
Exactly.
Because my money for where the Elder Scrolls 6 is happening is Hammerfell.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And Hammerfell doesn't have a tower of its own. There is the Orichalc Tower, which was in Yokuda. So that's kind of long gone, along with the rest of that continent. So there is no real tower for us to destroy. So
unless,
right.
Well, okay. So some of the rumor is that it actually takes place in two zones, in both Hammerfell
and High Rock,
which I think is probably likely. So
I was going to say that would make more sense in terms of this, like,
I think that's probably very, very likely.
Yep.
At the Adamantine Tower, if this is going back to the Adamantine Tower, this might wrap up this wacky, crazy.
I was going to say, this might not thing. Be so wacky if that were the case. And then it's like, okay. And that's the thing, is there's so many unknowns going forward currently, because, you know, the speculation with Elder Scrolls 6 is rampant. To a degree that Bethesda needs to periodically just be like, yes, we're working on it. Please talk to us about literally anything else, because it's not ready. When we finally do get our answers, I don't know. It'll be very strange that this is one of, I guess I always like when things have like a long, worthwhile payoff. And this is going to be like one of, like, if theoretically this is a trajectory that they are going on for the series, this is going to be one of the literal longest running things that would have a payoff that I could think of, because oh my Lord, like, it is literal generations of writing that would lead to this. So
hey, guys, real quick, hold your thought. I've got to take a break from the mid part of the show, and we've got to thank our patrons, because I have a feeling we're going into some really interesting territory here. And I want to pose a question, because we're getting some good questions from chat. Things like, do we know the stone for the Orichalc Tower?
Yeah, I just saw that.
Is there a chance that it came over with the Yukudans and is in Hammerfell? Is it likely that that's the only tower left standing? I have questions about the Adamantine Tower. We know that the Thalmor are messing with stuff. I've got questions about that.
I wasn't getting into yet.
Yeah, and so before, just I want you guys and I want our friends in chat to ponder this. What are the Thalmor doing when it comes to the Adamantine Tower? Are they trying to destroy it? Are they trying to control it? Will that help them meet their goals? What do you think that's going on with that if this wacky, weird theory is actually true? So hold on to that. We're going to go to the middle of the show. We'll be right back.
The skies are marked with numberless sparks, each a fire and every one a sign.
In a world where solid-state electronics and vacuum tubes are still meta, people never stop loving atomic-powered everything. A chosen 500 stepped inside a subterranean vault to be spared the nuclear horror of the inevitable Great War. 25 years later, they emerge after the fallout settles to retake Appalachia. Among them, two former rivals whose blood feud will tear West Virginia apart and their epic struggle for survival. Chad, a vault bro who has a strength of 15, an intelligence of 2, and is a complete wasteland dickhead. Simon, a complicated anti-hero who chooses light and hope, but accidentally becomes a cannibal and wakes up naked and afraid with a Scorch Beast Queen after a date goes terribly wrong. What? I mean, it's a wild wasteland, right? This dark humor radio drama will have you driving off the road and crawling out from under the fallout. Two men. One wasteland. And so many nukes. Chad, a Fallout 76 podcast, rated R, now streaming on your holotape player podcasty thing.
All right, I'll try to make this mid part really quick because this is a really great discussion. So we need to thank our patrons. Thank you to all 47 of our patrons. You guys are amazing. I would love to hit 50 patrons by the end of the month, and you guys can sign up even for just $1 a month and get ad-free episodes. So if we have done anything to help you get through your workday, help you with your commute or your workout, or just make the world a little bit of a better place, or even just educate you a little bit about the Elder Scrolls and help your games feel a little bit more fun and interesting, then we'd love for you to help us out and check out the Patreon at patreon.com/ElderScrollsLorecast to see what you can get back for helping to support the show. So go check that out. And a special thanks to our tier 5 patrons who get called out every month, Noodle Al Dente and Daniel O. Thank you guys. And if you want to join us on a future episode of the show, you can sign up as a tier 4 patron. So check that out as well. So thank you to all of you guys. And let's get back to the rest of the show.
Yes, yes, you're entirely brilliant. Conquering madness and all that. Blah, 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 blah.
Okay. All right. So we're back. I made that as quick as I could. All right. So
I'm highly efficient.
I tossed out some questions. What do you guys think?
Yep. I just want to say if it is High Rock that's going to be involved next time in the Adamantine Tower, that legitimately terrifies me if there are tower things going on. Because I'm not convinced that the towers are holding up the world in the sense that all of them are. Because it was the events from the first two that kind of settle things. You have Adamantine Tower landing, and then you have Red Heart, the Red Mountain, dolloping itself down with Lorcan's heart and establishing mortality. You've got your rules of reality established with those two.
But what if they are, once the rules of are established, what if they are capable of changing them?
Yes. Yes.
What if they're not necessarily required for, you know, maintaining so much as should somebody powerful enough gain the ability to control the tower, they could then define reality.
Yes, that's one of the theories that ESO puts out about the White Gold Tower. Saying an explanation as to why Cyrodiil isn't a jungle, which seems to be one of the ongoing bugbears in the lore. As to why Cyrodiil isn't a jungle is because it depends on who is holding Cyrodiil at the time and who is controlling the White Gold Tower, and it sets, and towers will alter their local reality to adjust to whatever they find particularly pleasurable. So the book says that Somerset becomes a tropical paradise because that's what the Ultima want. And so it becomes also tropical because that's what the aliens want, because they're elves and the Heartland High Elves and all that stuff.
Right.
But the, when the men control it, because they came down from Skyrim and Atmora and the North and Cold and all the rest of it, it becomes more temperate because they now control White Gold Tower. So it can absolutely be used to modify the local situation, and the deactivation of the tower is also something that potentially plays into it. Because if you look at, again, going back to the events of the games, whenever you find the deactivation of the tower, something bad happens fairly swiftly afterwards. Mm-hmm. After Morrowind, you have the Red Year. After Oblivion, you have the dissolution of the Empire. So it's entirely possible. Yeah, you have seismic events whenever these things are stopped, but it's going to do bad things for reality if Adamantia is destabilized. I think far more than anything else.
So okay, so let me pause at the next question.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Thalmor's goal to destabilize reality, or is it to control reality?
Yeah. Depends on who you ask. Because what if
they are trying to destabilize the other towers in order to then control the master tower so that they have nobody else has any recourse to then fight against them? Or what if the other towers, what if the master tower only actually has control over reality if all the other towers no longer have control? What if the key to the master tower having any power anymore at all is the other towers no longer working? What if it only comes online should the other towers be turned off?
That's
different.
That is an interesting one.
What if the gods are like, okay, we leave it to your hands. You are the people of the world. Do your thing. And so the elves are like, we're going to make our own towers. And they're like, wonderful. We don't need to use our tower anymore. Turn it off. They turn it off. And then the elves start making their towers. They're turning on their towers. Okay, you are now in control of your reality. Wonderful. And the gods go off to their planets, you know, the Aedrip go off to their planets, the Daedra start messing with it, whatever they want to do, right? And then the world happens, right? And then the Thalmor are going, well, we need to rewind this backwards. So they're going, let's turn off the towers. Turn off all the towers. All right, well, let's turn the main one back on.
I'm loving these sound effects, by the way, of the towers. Right.
Yeah, so this is how it actually sounded because I was really there.
Yeah.
What if that's the case? Because ultimately they want to rewind themselves back to the position where they were gods.
Yep.
Yeah, they do want to be little floaty amorphous, just so omnipotent
potentially
beings.
Potentially.
So, yeah, theoretically.
Theoretically. Yeah, I mean, this is following the logic of that. Of what, you know, or at least one of these thought processes is, and in order to do so, they would need to rewind the world back, and they want to undo things to go back to convention, and convention would be the point at which there were no other towers, and the elves were the most powerful, so they need to put the world back to that state.
I like that. Just like that the because again, I think the Thalmor are a really good enemy to have in the series, like and you know, they're pretty aggravating throughout Skyrim in general, and ESO as well, with the you know, basis for their a lot of the Thalmor abuse of everything. It's like they're a great enemy to stir you up to want to defeat them. And then obviously can get taken to the like whole of the Dominion and whatnot, which I always joke about and stuff. But no, in general, like the Thalmor themselves are like a great threat to have. I love the idea of the threat not just being so surface level as to be just, yeah, we want to totally rule over all the humans again and just control Tamriel. It's like, this is way deeper if that's like what they're, it's like, no, we need to return back to the the before time any of you humans even were muddling around and screwing up our perfect existence of being puffy clouds or whatever we were.
Whatever we were. So, and what if this is the what if this is the natural cycle of every Kelpa? Is that the cycle, it's like a circle. The cycle reaches a certain apex of elven to mannish, you know, domination, and then recedes back to elven domination, and then back to the gods becoming the ones who are in control. In order to do so, that the world has to cycle back to that, and they are just hurrying forward that cycle.
Yes. Although I would pour a little bit of cold water on that, just because the text for the Thalmor want to destroy the towers doesn't actually mention either the Thalmor or the towers, just to really confuse you.
That's the thing. That's why one of the things that I always say about that is like the Thalmor come across as much more just like, here is your, I mean, like without going, but they're very much, here is a blatant threat to have in Skyrim writing wise. And it's very strongly associated with like, okay, this is like representative of a very strong, very harsh regime. And, you know, they're spreading their influence. All of the extra stuff is definitely flavor that's been kind of added, like, okay, well, is there a deeper meaning? Is there? And that's kind of the thing, much like the towers themselves, I'm kind of hoping is there, because I don't actually know if it is. It's just kind of like, ooh, that'd be neat if there was like a more metaphysical reason why they wanted to do what they're doing, as opposed to stinky Nords, we take over now type of deal.
Absolutely. Right. Can I just I just think we just to unpack that text a bit.
Sure, go for it.
This is what appears to be an Altmeri commentary on Talos. So Altma, we don't know anything else. It's not necessarily Thalmor, not anything else. Mm-hmm. And just for context, this was posted on the forums before Skyrim released.
Oh, interesting.
To kill man is to reach heaven from where we came before the doom drum's iniquity. When we accomplish this, we can escape the mockery and long shame of the material prison. So they want to achieve this goal, we must 1. Erase the upstart Talos from the mythic. His presence fortifies the wheel of the convention. Remember the whole structure of the world and all that. And binds our souls to this plane. 2. Remove man not just from the world, but from the pattern of possibility. So that the very idea of them can be forgotten and thereby never again repeated. 3. With Talos and the sons of Talos removed, the dragon will become ours to unbind. The world of mortals will be over. The dragon will uncoil his hold on the stagnancy of linear time and move as free serpent again, moving through the ether without measure or burden, spilling time along the innumerable roads we once traveled. And with that, we will regain the mantle of the imperishable spirit. That's kind of relying on the idea of Talos as the thing that's holding everything up,
right?
Rather than almost the towers as such.
So, right. Yep. So if the Kelpa is the circle,
yes.
Right. And the top of the circle is the beginning of the Kelpa. Then Talos is the 6 o'clock.
Yes. And if you go into some other models of reality, that you'll hear the term, if you search for the term parabolic Kelpa, that will also bring up some other stuff that talks about how magical the world is, because you hear all the stuff about the first era, like you hear about battle spires and which is an imperial space station, basically, and travel to Aetherius and all sorts. And it's got all of these wonders and stuff that's kind of slowly declining. And then you have the Oblivion Crisis as kind of the nadir point. And then you get, Oblivion bursts back into Mundus again. And then you get the dragons coming back. And then all of this other stuff starts to happen. Mm-hmm. You're getting things going more and more magical again.
Right.
So you've got kind of the magicalness going down and then going up.
Right. Right.
So as you get more and more magical, it could very well unspin the world in some way.
So coming back up from Talos means removing Talos and then getting back to a magical world that unbinds and removes men back from the thing, goes back to an elven focused world that is more magical and then eventually is all God's spirits and no world.
Yes. But it doesn't seem to involve the towers in any way, shape, or form.
Or at least it doesn't mention it here.
Constant bugbear.
It just doesn't mention it.
If you're tying that to the idea of, they want to if they want to just remove all material stuff and you think of the towers as the thing solidifying the material stuff, right, then yeah, that absolutely works.
And the towers are all associated with elves.
Sans the
apart from the three.
I was going to say, well, the thing that I'm kind of interested in, because you're right, since it's kind of just like that seems to target much more like men, again, men specifically Talos. Ascending is a problem. But when you look at that, couldn't you also, to a degree, I mean, it's not specifically mentioned, but with the Numidium itself, I mean, that kind of almost is so intertwined with so much of what happened during the whole Talos thing. It almost makes me wonder if that ended up being something that was, for better or worse, like, okay, well, did they intend to have that be like a tower that would matter? But it almost makes me wonder if that's the tower that they're relating to when they're talking so much about Talos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, particularly seeing as when you look at Greek god Talos, he is a brass god.
Right.
Talos and the Numidium are totally linked. It could very well be that. But and that actually ties into some things in the Truth and Sequence, actually, because in amidst all of the various ramblings, says that NM, go figure what NM means, is the child of Nern ensuing of the bad Nern, and the representative of all things bad.
Interesting.
So yeah, that does that would tie that together quite neatly.
Interesting. I actually didn't even know about that. That's a fascinating little point. It's like, oh, okay. So they're just directly linking that as like, okay, here's your problem. Like right here, this is your issue.
Like, uh-huh, here we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Most profane is this: the walking horror that bears the name NM, the brass tower of vanity, the mindless guardian of the Nern prior, the antipodal god thing that reigns on the darkest pole of the sacred Nern sphere. Of all threats to Tamriel Final, NM is the greatest.
Wow. Okay. That's much more specific to, like, I didn't even realize that necessarily. So that's it. Very interesting then. Huh?
I wonder how this all plays into the Chimer then, being that they were elves. I mean, they're the least elvish of the elves in some ways, because they're not, I mean, they're more mechanical minded. They're not religious. They're not
you mean
magic.
The Dwemer.
You mean the Dwemer?
I mean, I'm the Dwemer. I'm sorry, not the Chimer. The Dwemer.
They made the, themselves.
Not the Chimer. Not the Chimer. the Dwemer. Now I'm going to get somebody.
Yeah, no, I know.
Somebody who right on this YouTube video is going to be like, "You mean the Dwemer?" And because they will have heard me say this, and then they will have skipped over the part where you guys correct me, and they're going to say, "You meant to say the Dwemer." But you know what I'm saying? Like they're the most, in some ways, mannish of the elves, in that specifically they are not magically minded. They are disconnected
they're
in that way. I mean, they're looking to ascend the world in other means, but not through. Yeah,
they had very different methods of
very different methods
things,
and they made the Numidium, and so by being associated with the Numidium, then they would be looked like, the other elves wouldn't have looked at them kindly for that.
Yeah, I would not assume so.
Yeah, no. Yeah, although how far knowledge of the Numidium actually got around about the time while they were still around is questionable, because like,
imagine
got turned on.
Imagine the Dwemer, if they had existed into the time of Skyrim. Like, what would the Thalmor have thought of them? They wouldn't have gotten along at all.
No, absolutely like, not. Hard no.
They would have been considered the enablers of the men, if not the friends of the men, or something like that. Even if they weren't.
Like, yeah. you also have the Dunmer on that sort of a line as well, because because they are very much behind the idea of the material plane as a as a good thing.
Yep.
It's a place that is meant to make you better. It's meant to be hard and arduous and turn you into a better person through all of the trials and that sort of thing. Therefore, what Lorcan did was good. Whereas the Thalmor are saying, no, this was a huge mistake. The Doom drums iniquity, etc.
Right. But going back to the origin of my thought, this idea that they created the Numidium, which helped supply Talos with fulfilling his goals, would have been seen as an atrocity.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Plus, then the Tribunal give the Numidium to Talos as well, which was a fantastic move.
Furthering what you were saying.
But they're not, by the time of the events of Skyrim, they're no longer around to have to, you know, deal with the ramifications of that. But neither are the Dwemer, which is convenient. But imagine if they were, would have happened?
They would not have got on.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I could still see it kind of shaking down in similar ways to how it has, because the fourth era of Thalmor have sort of sucked up all of their natural allies, so to speak, already at this point. You've got the Khajiit on side, you've got the Bosma doing whatever. But the Dunmer and the Dwemer would not be on the same page, assuming they still function as they do in the games, which they probably wouldn't, because they would become one societal blob.
It would. I was going to say there'd be a lot of things would probably be very different if that was if the Dwemer were still around, and for that matter, you know, the Battle of Red Mountain, it's like, well, they were much more friendly before that whole thing went down. So it's like,
Although I'm also kind of interested to know whether what the Thalmor would have done if they'd have actually managed to hold the White Gold Tower, because that is very, very deliberately kind of built to be a Mundus manipulation machine.
Yes.
Because the structure of White Gold in particular is that it's a model of the wheel in a single tower. It's got little mini towers all around it that are supposed to be the eight spokes and all the rest of it. And just to pull up another quote from the Numantia Intercept. Though the Aeliads gave theirs a central spire as the imago of Adamantia, the whole of the Polydox resembled the wheel, with eight lesser towers forming a ring around the Primus. To dismiss this mythotexture as being a mockery of the Arabis is to ignore an important point. This same jest gave White Gold Tower a power over Creatia unlike any on this planet. It was a triumph of sympathetic mega-fetish and the start of the threat to Empire that brings me to this council. If the Aeliads made their own wheel within the wheel, Werweb ad Semblio, what would happen if they plucked its strings?
Sympathetic mega-fetish. I love that line.
Yes. It's beautiful. It means exactly what it says. Like, a voodoo doll is a fetish.
Because
the idea of you stab the voodoo doll and then someone gets injured, that's exactly what's going on here, that the Aeliads built this thing to say, what do we want to do with the cosmos today? Let's just tweak this a little bit and see what happens.
Poke this and see what
that moon's so, in the way, we'll just shift that there,
but if the Thalmor were to get hold of that and it was functional, the Oblivion Crisis and the destruction of the Amulet of Kings, it's arguably not. But if they could actually hold that thing and use it the way it was originally intended, that's some heavy-duty artillery to try and achieve what they were trying to achieve.
Exactly. If that was their goal, then that's one real solid way to do it.
Do you think maybe that was the kind of secret unspoken power of the Amulet of Kings? Wasn't so much this idea that, as long as the dragon, those with dragon blood wield the Amulet of Kings, the world will be safe from, it was more of just just maintain the tower and you can make sure that the world will, work in ways that will keep you guys safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly. Like, yeah, I mean, there's other stuff going on with the oversight, with all of the Emperor's souls that are stuffed into it, but
yeah, but in some ways it was just like, yeah, you know, like
absolutely,
yeah, like yeah, yeah. Daedra want to send terrible storms at you, just like make sure that the storms don't come because you can change the weather if you want.
So Akatosh or Lorcan just hand their daughter the keys to the adamantine and to the white gold tower,
right?
And say here you go, deal with it,
right? You don't have to worry about earthquakes.
I
now
see that.
Yeah, it was, use it for responsible things, like it's going to rain Saturday and it's going to ruin our Dwemeri cookout, so we're gonna just change that real quick.
Yeah. You feel like you don't have enough food for the harvest? Make it rain some more.
Suddenly you do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, and there was another question in chat that was talking about the stone of the Orichalc Tower.
Yes.
That we don't know, but there was a forum post, which I'm happy to go along with, Michael Kirkbride was asked, what are the stones of Greensap, of Orichalc and Crystal Lake Lore? And he said that the stone of Greensap was a fruit, which it turns out to be, because we find out in ESO it's the Perchance Acorn.
Mm-hmm.
The stone of the of Crystal Lake Lore, he said, was a person, which is not quite true, but kind of is if you play through ESO Somerset. I'm just going to say, look at where you find it, and leave it at that, because I don't want to spoil too much, because that's a brilliant quest.
That's a wonderful, go play it.
Yeah. And so that's kind of true. And the Orichalc is a sword.
Which makes sense.
I'm kind of curious, because that also ties in with Hunding, which was at various points a crown and a sword. And various other things, although that is kind of dropping huge hints about the plot of the Redguard game. Mm-hmm. That's referencing that. But if the stone of the Orichalc Tower is the Hunding, then yeah, you can do some. It doesn't take a huge amount of theory crafting to think that Elder Scrolls 6 is in Hammerfell. So something like sword singing, is quite close to the Thum in Skyrim. So
yeah.
And so you can kind of have that as a player power. And then you also say, well, find this sword, restore the stone of the Orichalc Tower. Bingo, sword singing is back.
Right. And I very much am of you know, the wild speculation on Elder Scrolls 6. That seems like one of the most likely things, because like you said, your ability to draw a comparison to shouts, which I actually ironically didn't use as much in Skyrim, but I know so many people who like basically build stuff entirely around like shout builds and stuff like that. And it's like, people love that. And it was super unique to the series, because it, you know, a lot of people in gaming, like as much as the Elder Scrolls are popular, Skyrim became a household name. And that was obviously being able to have your shouts just became synonymous with the series. So to then not have a strong background power outside just Magicka would be kind of weird for a sequel, because so many people most likely design wise be expecting something like that. So that'd be kind of a nice way to just like, oh, here's something like what you're used to, but it's not the same thing because you're not a Dragonborn anymore. Like that wouldn't make sense in this scenario. So
Fragile Shark says, seems like it would be a great MacGuffin for TES6 if you are the new Hunding.
The chosen one again.
I was going to say. Well, I'd say that tends to be, in a series that is really creative like the Elder Scrolls, I'm not of the mindset of like, dumbing things down. Streamlining a lot of times I feel is underrated, and people kind of refer to it as dumbing down. Sometimes things are dumbed down. Oftentimes I feel they are streamlined, and they're not as bad as people tend to think, as somebody who's played through all of, been going through all the games. Some of the old things that the series was known for, I'm very glad were streamlined out of the series, but I don't feel it necessarily dumbed them down. On the flip side of that, when you want to appeal to a large mass audience, just on a casual level outside, you know, the nonsense we're into, like, hey, let's discuss tower lore. When you're just on a surface level of I'm going to buy a video game for my son or daughter, you being a superhero is a pretty good draw for somebody to just like hop on board. And then it's like, okay, how deep do you want to go with it? So again, you get the trope of being the chosen one pretty frequently.
What if they turn it on its head? What if you start out the game thinking you're the chosen one, but you're not?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I liked about 4. You're actually not so much the chosen one as the person who's important enough to make somebody else the chosen one.
That's why I really like that.
And then if you know, you go into the expansion, you kind of become a different chosen one with Shivering Isles, but not to the degree that you're destined to save the world. Like, no, you're destined to help somebody else save the world.
And then the Elder Scrolls 3 was had you question, like, are you the Nereverin, really? Are you an Imperial plant?
Am I what even imposter?
what even is the Nereverin?
So it's like they even when they do have the superhero trope, they do mess with it a bit, just enough that it's not totally generic. And, you know, one would assume that we're going to be a prisoner to start things, because that'd be a weird trend to buck at this point, as at least the mainline entries, you're always like a prisoner. Not so much that the spinoffs, but you know, that's fine.
Yeah. And Elder Scrolls Online has added a whole bucket load of prisoner lore.
Sure did.
Into what that means. That was beautiful.
So we're getting close to the end. Anything else you want to add before we head out?
We covered my stuff, so it's all on Aramithis. If you got anything else to add, because these are the points I really wanted to hit that I was super amused by.
Yep. I wanted to talk about the pseudo towers and what that might mean. Because we have you have the Doom Spire or the Doom Crag in Rivenspire. That basically it happens that the aliens who went there and tried to build a spire above their settlement were trying to create a tower. That, you remember when we were talking about towers as tied to cultures and potentially as expressions of cultures. The aliens have kind of, you have multiple examples of the aliens trying to do that. You have them, they tried to build the Doomspire, that according to Phrastus, it was that they were attempting to create a metaphysical structure that could be a focus of Arabic power, much as the Adamantine Tower is said to be. They were trying to build a tower, if Phrastus is remotely right. And you also have them, I think it's in Arabic Enigma 4, the Elden Tree book talks about Anumeril coming to Valenwood and trying to basically mess around with the Perchance Acorn. It talks about how this things then became a definite acorn, or tried to make it a definite acorn. And so what they're trying to do, as they kind of, as they got scattered and kicked out of Cyrodiil after Alessia's rebellion, they've been trying to graft themselves on and create towers wherever they went. And I think what that's doing is saying that they're trying to rebuild their culture. They're trying to say, we are still the aliens, we are still relevant because we can still build a tower. I think that's what's going on with that. It's a very, very weird thing to do if that's not what they are.
Yeah.
Unless they're trying to build themselves something else. And there's also the Coral Tower of Thras, which is potentially the Slowed. I don't know enough about this really to speak with in anything approaching definite thoughts, but it's also apparently in Cold Harbor as well as Nirn.
There's like a duplicate because everything's just like a crappy mirror image in Cold Harbor type of thing. Isn't there supposed to be one somewhere in Cold Harbor?
Yeah. Which is also interesting because the Slode are most tied to Somerset, and Crystal Like Law is supposedly in all dimensions. It's a fun sort of imitation that Thras are trying to pull off. If the Coral Tower is supposed to be a tower, whether it actually is or not, I don't think we know enough about it to say.
That sounds very Slode, though. Just like, fine, we're going to do our own. Like, whatever, we'll do, we'll do our own thing and we'll cover it in slime. That's fine.
We'll cover it in slime and it'll be gross.
Yeah. Slime and dead babies.
Slime and dead, yes. With Slode soap for everybody.
Oh.
Yeah, we don't use mortar. We stick this thing together with soap, which is just our desiccated children.
Slode are so dark.
I'm going to build it with our dead babies. Oh.
Yes.
Yeesh. Oh.
Yeah. But those two things are just basically other thoughts of that. Towers are kind of loci of cultural power, as well as potentially mucking around with metaphysics, and those sorts of things. If you want to check out some more about the towers as cultural things rather than as existential things, there's a thread on our Teslaw, the subreddit, that's by Val Ritz, that has a fantastic explanation of that. That just kind of talks about that kind of links did most of the legwork in linking towers to cultures, as far as I'm concerned. So if you want to know more about that, check that out.
Cool.
That's about everything from me.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been a lot of fun.
Great.
And man, I can't wait for our quiz show coming up in just a week. From tomorrow, that's going to be
place your bets.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah, place your bets. I've got
people are apparently very much placing their bets on Twitter. I keep saying,
are they? Where is this?
Apparently,
are they voting?
People are taking sides. It's team me or team Arimathias. Apparently,
oh, they need to vote on my poll. Nobody's voting on the poll. Can you guys share my poll?
Yes,
share the poll because we need to get an official votes on the poll. We got to.
I'll allow it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, share the poll. I'll retweet it again.
Is it mandatory that I cheer myself on, or can I match fix?
No, it's not at all. Wait, no. You can't just you can't just purposely lose. That's not...
$100 on Arimathias.
You can't take a dive like a bad boxer.
Yeah, and Drelian has a good point. It's that they're talked about in the novel. The towers are talked in the novels really vaguely. It's like they hold up the world or something.
Right.
Is pretty much the dialogue. Everyone knows they have some sort of power. No one really knows what
it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, guys, is there anything you want to share? We'll start with Arimathias. Anything you want to share before we head out?
Cool. Nothing apart from where you can find me. I am at Arimathias on Twitter. My solo show is Written in Uncertainty podcast, and I am a reasonably regular attender on the Selectives Lorecast, where we both of those things sort of dive into the weirder lore or the deep lore, whichever way you want to spin it, of the Elder Scrolls on various levels. The Written in Uncertainty, I script it, I go through, dig through sources. Selectives, we talk about it. We talk about it. Ideas get bounced around, and we come up with a whole bunch of stuff. It's just fantastic fun. And I'm not streaming at the moment, but I may be restarting in the near future. Just watch twitch.tv/Arimathias for that. But nothing much happening at the moment.
Cool.
And yeah, I think that is about it for now.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us again. This has been great.
No.
And
thank you, robots. It's been fantastic.
Yeah. And we should have you on more often, actually. We don't do a good job about getting guests on our show. But maybe if Lotus and I both try to do a better job, we'll actually. Lotus, feel free to just book anybody anytime. You know, I'm pretty flexible. I'm pretty flexible with the stuff, man. We both have a lot of contacts out there. Just if you're just talking to somebody one day and it just crosses your mind, just be like, hey, man, just come join us on the show.
You may come to regret that.
as long as they're cool, you know.
I was gonna say this 23rd guest this session. What's happening?
Why do we have 17 people booked for tomorrow? What happened? Pork Chop, go ahead. Let him. How can people get?
So, for those people who don't know, computer name.
If you look at just to the bottom left of his little name right there is Pork Chop on Zoom call.
The computer on the network that I'm on happens to be named Pork Chop, so it shows up in the call as Pork Chop, which we didn't know about until this
started. It's your new nickname, Pork Chop. All right, Pork Chop.
So, what do you call it? You can find me, Lotus of Doom, Twitter, Twitch, and over at Tales of Tamriel, which is the other podcast I am on, where it's more of a roundtable discussion of all things Elder Scrolls. Kind of an emphasis on ESO, but I've been going through all the other games in the series so that I can say that I've completed them all. And that's pretty much where I am. Nothing super detailed that I'm planning. We'll be having our Battle Spire multiplayer stream coming up. I'm just trying to get everybody's schedules lined up so that we can have as many people involved as possible. Fingers crossed that it actually turns on, because the game occasionally struggles to do that. So trying to then put 8 people in a multiplayer match will be a different beast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. I just noticed the poll just jumped to 50-50, 2 votes for each of you. So.
Gasp.
Get your votes in there. This will run all week. And if you're in the live show right now and you're on Twitter, get your votes in. You could sway this. All right, everybody. And you guys know how to get a hold of me. Yes. I'm all over the place. On Twitter at robots_radio, robotsradio.net online. Come tell us your thoughts about this tower lore stuff. And are we just wacky in the head, or you think there's actually something going on here? On the Robots Radio Discord, all 3 of us are on there all the time, and you never know if any one of the 3 of us will jump in and continue the conversation with you. So just share your thoughts. We'll be on there chatting away, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on that stuff. So we'll talk to you guys again soon. We'll be back next week, and probably at our usual time, 9 p.m. Eastern on Thursday night, and we'll see you later. Thanks for joining us. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the show, please reach out to us at elderscrollslorecast@gmail.com or on Twitter at @ESOLorecast. I really appreciate you listening, and I'd love to hear from you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Do you like adventure?
Yeah.
Do you like laughing?
Yeah.
Would you like to listen to a group of people you don't know play D&D and reference retro pop culture you vaguely remember? Excellent. You're going to love Committee Quest. We play D&D in the world of Amaran. We use adventure modules and supplements made by people in the community. We also have a sweet synthwave backing track. Come and join us on our adventure. Volume 1 has been completed. Volume 2 coming the end of January. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Are you into the cyberpunk tabletop games or excited for Cyberpunk 2077? Are you looking to brush up on the lore, stay up on all the latest news, and talk about the game when it comes out? Check out the Cyberpunk Lorecast, a show from Robots Radio with me, your host, Robots. We'll go over all the details you need to know about the world, characters, and story of Cyberpunk. Available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, all you wannabe raiders out there, it's your bestest girl, Rose, coming at you from top of the world. Now it's time for your local traffic and weather. Welp, looks like almost everyone's still dead, so traffic is at a standstill. And now a word from our sponsor, because they're totally not bribing me with massive amounts of chems or anything. Seems as the stuffed shirts are back at the White Springs playing games with that total loser Modus. But hey, if that's your thing, whatever. So if all you squares wanted to hear more totally sort of, but maybe not boring stories about rebuilding Appalachia and being all goody-two-shoes, definitely not raiders, check out this thing they call a podcast, the Modus Files, whatever that's supposed to be. on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you listen to those things. Double ugh. They're not paying me enough for this. Till later. This is Rose. Raiders rule!